This episode of TWIM is brought to you by the new voice-activated Sync featuring hands-free calling, music, and podcast search, and turn-by-turn navigation. Available exclusively on Ford, Lincoln, and Mercury vehicles. For more details, visit SyncMyRidePodcast.com. And to enter to win a free Nano or Zune, send a tweet with hashtag SyncMyRidePodcast.
This week on the show, Exploding Brains, Alex's sliding social scale, and we have a dream for toilets in the living room. All this on This Week in Media, episode 159. Hey there, boys and girls. We are back. And we are really, really, truly back. This is This Week in Media, and your host, Daisy Whitney. And finally, I'm joined again by my compatriot, Alex Lindsay.
That's me.
I have missed you, Alex.
I missed you too.
It has been a while. We haven't been in the same room in 5 weeks, which is weird considering we usually host a show together.
I know. Well, it was either you or it was me, and it was back and forth. And
I know.
The last couple of weeks were a little trying.
I had the flu. Were crazy with work. You had the flu.
Your daughter had the flu.
I had sick kids. I haven't been in the studio, I think, since I went to Las Vegas for the iMedia conference that I programmed in late October. And now it's the end of November.
So now we're back.
So now we're back and we'll be on, you know, we should probably both be here most of December, I'm thinking, until we take off many, many days during the Kwanzaa Miss Holidays.
No holidays.
How about that? Did you see how
no
I mix that
holidays.
Up? Do you see how I mix that up with Kwanzaa first and then Hanukkah and then Christmas
so
last?
So sweet.
I'm so ecumenical. Let me tell you about our wonderful guest today. As always, as often, we have Tim Street. For those of you who are watching live, many of you I know will be listening throughout the week on iTunes, and we adore you. For those of you who are tuning in live today, Tim is the Don today. He just is. I mean, look at him there. Look at him there in that seat with his Batman shirt and his plaid check jacket. I mean, does he just like look like the Don?
A Domino Ristorante Italiano in San Francisco.
There you go. Tim Street is a media producer. Ape Digital is his company, and he's known for French Made TV and many other exciting things on the internet. We also have two first-time guests, so we can really throw hardballs at them, right?
I say, go for it. Right.
Lori, the resident. She does a wonderful show called The Resident. She's my homegirl. Lori is my homegirl in New York City. I am not going to talk about the felony we committed a couple weeks ago on air because I don't want anyone going after you. But I adore Lori. Lori actually, from time to time, is kind of like my New York correspondent for the New Media Minute. So I don't know why I haven't had you on the show before, but you are here now and we are grateful to have you. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm looking forward to chatting with you guys.
Well, thank you for being on. And also
see a
another
bit of my green screen in the frame.
Oh, that's right. You do. I didn't know you had a green screen at your house. That's kind of.
Yeah,
did you paint
that's
it
what
yourself?
The magic happens.
Did you paint
no,
that
just
yourself?
It's like it's paper. It's actually paper that I taped up there.
Do you have,
it's not even that fancy.
Do you have that, Alex, in your how to make a green screen? Tape it up with paper. Is that part of your technique?
Yeah, not usually.
No. But hey, you know, whatever works. Whatever.
Yeah,
works.
If it works, if it keys.
That's what matters,
yeah,
right? That's
exactly
what matters. And then we also have from Connecticut, Lon Seidman, who recently launched localonlinenews.tv. He's a longtime TWIM listener. We've worked together a little bit from time to time. And what I'm really excited about is Lon is kind of like our prototypical Uber viewer, listener, because he's a media producer, but he really kind of takes to heart a lot of things that we talk about on the show and has built up this project, just kind of his own baby, started off, and you know, you've got advertisers, you've got viewers, is that correct?
We have all of the above, and you guys have cost me a lot of money in purchases of equipment and everything else. So thanks, Alex, for doing that.
Really my pleasure.
Well, that makes our advertisers happy. And
exactly.
Speaking of advertisers, I want to let you know that this episode of TWIM is brought to you by the new voice-activated Sync. Not like kitchen sync, S-I-N-K, but Sync, yes, for Ford, S-Y-N-C, like Sync Your Podcast. It gives you hands-free control of most any mobile phone or media player in your Ford, Lincoln, or Mercury car or truck. Because, you know, a lot of our listeners listen to this while they're driving. And what this does, so Sync basically listens to your voice, so you can listen to podcasts like this one, which we hope is what you're listening to, or music, or you can make phone calls hands-free, which you should be doing. You should be making your phone calls hands-free.
It's safe.
It's much safer. It also enables turn-by-turn navigation. It's available exclusively on Ford, Lincoln, and Mercury vehicles. And for more details, visit SyncMyRidePodcast.com, which is just kind of a cool, you know, that's just kind of a cool name. You can also enter to win a free Nano or Zune by sending a tweet with the hashtag SyncMyRidePodcast.
It's actually, Ford's really, I think, doing some pretty cool stuff here. I mean, I've got to play with a little bit of what
you did?
Leo had, and it's pretty nice.
Does he have this in his new car?
He's got a new car. He's got a new stuff. He's got all the stuff in there. It's pretty high tech.
Really?
You know, that along with a fully electric car, I could, you know.
He has an electric car?
No. Oh. He doesn't, but I want to get one. I'm really looking forward to the new Ford that's going to come out with that's, you know, got an electric powertrain.
Wow.
That along with a sync, and I'm set.
Yeah, you're totally set. You're totally set. So there you go. Support our advertisers, please, because they make it possible for us to do this podcast. One more note before we get started. Please be our friend on Facebook. John Riley, one of our show producers, has been sending me this, and I don't know why. I'm having a hard time suggesting it to all of my friends. I just can't get the right buttons on Facebook, and I which just sounds lame.
So like, we're just going to tell all
like,
of you
I
right
cover
now.
Technology, and I can't quite hit the right button to suggest to friends, because a lot of Twin listeners are my friends on Facebook. So please, it's, you know, facebook.com this week in media, something like that. Go to my page, Daisy Whitney, and you'll find it, you know, one of the pages I'm a fan of or something. But it's great because we update it with stories all throughout the week. So you not only get the links to the shows as we're doing them, the live notes and everything, we might even have show notes there.
That's crazy.
The mythical show notes might even appear on our Facebook page. But John's
That's
doing
crazy
a great
talk.
It's totally crazy talk. Totally wild and crazy talk. Speaking of syncs and crazy talk and Flip, let's talk about the future of Flip. New TV reported last week that the next iteration of Flip video cameras will be Wi-Fi enabled, allowing users to wirelessly upload their videos. This next-gen Flip will also reportedly have a slide-out screen that reveals the record and menu buttons underneath. You know, I have a new slide-out on my... I got a new phone, Alex. I got an Android.
How do you like it?
I largely like it. Because... we'll get to the story in a minute. Because here's what I believe about technology. None of it is perfect.
Yeah.
You have to accept that there's no technology that's really going to do exactly what you want it to do. And once you have that kind of Zen acceptance that you get it mostly to do what you want, and then you kind of have to put in a little elbow grease or just a little acceptance that
just,
it's not everything.
You're just accepting the fact that it's not an iPhone, but it works on your.
Well, see, it has keys, which I like, and it also doesn't drop calls constantly. Anyway,
what were you gonna say, Tim?
I was gonna say it's just like men, right, Daisy?
I have a perfect husband who I adore very, very much. Thank you.
He is a nice guy.
Yes, you met him. You spend time with him. We actually will eventually get to news, which is it's like we haven't seen each other in weeks, so we're all chit-chatting. Anyway, so but the bigger question I think that we should talk about is, you know, how much life is left in this as a standalone product. I mean, that's what New TV says in the story. Lori, I want to throw this to you. Do you use the Flip? I mean, you make your own videos. I don't know what sort of equipment you use, but I'm sure obviously you're familiar with it. I just wonder with camera phones that do all these things, with higher end, you know, HD cameras dropping in price. And Tim, I know you use it as well, so we'll get to you in a sec. But Lori, do you use the Flip? Do you think it has a future? Is it a device that eventually gets phased out?
I actually got a Flip camera from YouTube years ago. They sent it to, I guess, their first several partners, and I was one of their first content partners. So they sent me one, and I was like, this is the coolest thing ever. I'm going to use it everywhere, and I take it often with me when I'm, you know, walking around Brooklyn, but I've stopped carrying it. I have to say, I don't carry it anymore. I feel like it's kind of been, you know, like you said, like on your phone, you can take video, and like it just kind of been left in the dust. It's still like a cool little camera, and the casing's really cool. But I don't know. To me, I wish the company well, because I really was psyched about it when I first got it. But I kind of feel like they've lost their little niche, which they owned for a while there. So I don't know. I feel like they got to do something.
Well, wishing is the kiss of death. Tim, I know you're an avid Flip user, or you have been. Are you still a Flip fan? What do you see as the future for this product?
Well, my Flip camera broke.
Oh,
and so I went out and I bought an iPhone 3GS, and that's what I'm using now. The video quality is not as good as the Flip, and it's surely not as good as the new Kodak small, you know, digital video camera. That thing's incredible. But you know, there are times when I miss the Flip. The audio quality was much better than the iPhone. Steve Garfield turned me on to a little microphone that fits on the iPhone 3GS, and I'm using that directional microphone now to do my videos. But the Flip was great until it broke, and I was like, I don't, you know, can't fix it. Don't want to spend the money. It doesn't make sense. Just go buy a new iPhone.
Lon, what do you shoot your videos for local online news TV with?
Well, thanks to Alex's suggestion, we bought those Canon SD card cameras. So we have a bunch of those HD. The HFS 100 is our favorite right now.
Like
but
those?
I love them. Yeah. The face recognition is awesome because everything for our reporters go out is one man bands or one woman bands, as the case may be. So it does all the exposure, all of the, you know, focusing is just, they don't have to think about it, which has been really, really good. But we use flip cameras actually for, we don't do user generated content on the site, but we do, pass out flip cameras to local residents that are doing something cool. So for example, we had, like the recent high school graduations in town, you know, rather than setting up a camera on a tripod at graduation, we decided to give the flip cams out to graduating seniors. And that worked really well. You know, they're cheap. So if they break, it's, you know, probably the least expensive piece of gear we have. And by the time you compress a video down and put it up on Blip TV, which is who we use for our main hosting, you know, no one really can tell the difference. So they're really good for that. But the problem is, I think, for Flip is that the camera is so good. It was good on the first iteration. It does one thing, and it does it very well, and you can add features, but it's really hard to make that product better, I think.
Well, one of the things that I think is interesting is the idea of the Wi-Fi and being able, and whether that's going to be something that will stream. Not only will it upload, but will it stream that video signal over Wi-Fi? That would be very interesting to me because you're seeing things like with Livestream. Is it Livestream? Is it what used to be Mogulus?
Yeah, Livestream. You can do iPhone 3GS Livestream.
So you can be streaming. You know, when you look at those when you look at those streaming options, you know, I think that there are a lot of interesting things you could do with a bunch of these cameras that are very inexpensive. That I think you could eventually do with an iPhone, but you'd be able to do multicam over Wi-Fi or even be able to hook it up. I mean, one of the things that a lot of these little cameras sometimes don't let you do. I know and we haven't tested the newest flips, but they wouldn't let you get a live feed out of the camera. You know, so you could record to the camera and it had a little analog out, but that analog out would only play back what it already recorded. Then you're kind of like, you know, I could put together this little multicam and then I could be switching on some kind of piece of software, but no, you can't. And so being able to kind of put those things together, I mean, I know it gets a little geeky, but I think that there are people who would want to stretch that out. I think as far as a average consumer, which is flips,
right?
You know, real
Matt Lauer
audience.
Uses the flip.
Yeah, I think that there is. I think there's a challenge. I think there's a challenge to, you know, getting over the fact that there. You know, we'll probably see 720 in the next version of the iPhone. We'll probably see 720 across the board in a lot of these little devices, whether it's our iPod or iPhone or iTouch or our other cameras and so on and so forth. I think 720p is going to be pretty normal. And so in that world, it does get very difficult. I think that there are a lot of things that they can improve. Low light performance. And one of the things that you don't do on a flip is shoot in dark areas because it gets really grainy really fast. And so they could make the picture better. I don't know.
Have some lights attached to it, you know?
No lights. Just being able to get better low light performance. I think that makes a difference for the average individual because they're shooting in their house. They're shooting at night. They're shooting birthdays. They're shooting stuff like that. Being able to show that there was a significant change in how that works, I think would make a difference for the average person.
And, you know, Flip, in its defense for its future or its potential future, is definitely has a strong brand. It has a strong brand now, you know, with consumers who purchase cameras. So that's something that I don't think should be discounted. Aren't you proud of me, though, for getting rid of my BlackBerry, Alex?
I am. It's the first step.
I don't have a BlackBerry anymore. Hey, Tim, I want you to lead off with our next story. It's about Grey's Anatomy getting a web spinoff. I want you to remember I stopped watching the show because it's bad. But it is interesting. Did you didn't hear the bulletin? Yeah, I switched to Glee. Go ahead, Tim.
So for all the Daisy fans on the show, just want to let you know that Grey's Anatomy has gotten their own web spinoff. And Daisy, well, she stopped watching the show, so I don't know what to tell you.
So the news is basically that a lot of the characters who play interns on the show, I don't remember all of the characters' names off the top of my head, but a lot of the characters who are playing some of the interns, some of the newer ones, you're not going to find Dr. McDreamy or McSteamy or Meredith or Dr. Yang on this. But, you know, I think it's always interesting when a big marquee show does some sort of spinoff. But I guess I wonder, since it's, you know, one kind of, it kind of reminds me of a couple years ago when The Office had a summer version, and it was basically everybody except Mike, Dwight, Jim, and Pam. Right? I don't know. I mean, I guess it doesn't make me want to watch it. I mean, could they lure me back in? You know, maybe they could lure me back in if it was the main characters. Maybe I would, you know, dabble in this. But I think for the hardcore fans, yeah. I mean, I think about like a show that I'm really into right now, which is Glee. Like if there was just a good show. Just because you know what? Life should be a musical, okay? I'm writing a blog post on that. I don't know why people say that it's not believable, that they don't like musicals because people don't break out in song every day. Well, people don't like, you know,
there's nothing wrong with show tunes.
Aliens,
I think,
every
it speaks
day
to the human condition.
A lot of the crazy things they do in movies, but I don't care. I think we should break out in song every day. But anyway, I could get into that even if it was some of the characters who aren't quite the main characters. It's just one of those things that deepens the experience for existing fans. I mean, what do you think about web spinoffs?
Well, you know, you take a look at Heroes, and they did the Nowhere Man with David Lawrence, the puppet master. And I think it was great for the people who, you know, are those core fans. It might draw in some new fans, but it's just more work for people who love TV.
That's an interesting conclusion. Lori, what do you think? Are web spinoffs just more work for people who like TV? Like, is it just too much stuff and we don't need it?
To some degree, I do agree, because I feel like, you know, the stuff that I watch on the internet is so different than the stuff that I watch on TV. I want it to be much more UGC feeling on the web. I want it to feel like there's an element where someone could possibly swear or nudity or some other kind of content that you're not going to see on TV. So I think that there's like such a difference for me personally with the kinds of content. Saying that, though, does not mean that I don't think it's a good idea to have web spinoffs from TV shows. As long as the content merits the new medium that it's in. As long as, okay, we're going to take some Office content or some Glee content, which Daisy would love, and have it on the web, then they should be singing dirty songs, or they should be pushing the envelope in different ways. They should use the medium for its strengths and the kinds of things that people are used to seeing it, rather than just producing little segments of television.
Well, and one of the things that I'd be really interested in is deepening your understanding of given characters. And it could feel theoretically like a more reality show kind of thing, where you're following behind them, or, you know, like it's doing something where you're taking something that you wouldn't necessarily see in the show and showing a little bit more of that person's home life or that person's whatever, or that, or something that deepens your understanding. That would be a great way for me to augment what's on the show. Now, I don't think that
What you're talking about is getting to know you content rather than just more scripted content. If you're going to watch something on the web related to a show, it should be something that helps you get to know the characters and the actors more rather than just another separate storyline.
Right. You know, not more of the show, but something that's distinctly different than what the show is. But it makes it, you know, and this would be Heroes is a great example of something where people might really get into that, where there could be a whole subplot that's going on online that is, you know, in individual things that show these folks when they were kids, or, you know, other things, or things that you're not going to see on the show. You wouldn't need to watch it, but it would deepen your experience of the broadcast show if you're watching on the web.
And Battlestar Galactica did a great web series a couple of years ago, where they, you know, I mean, they took the series and they put them on that planet for almost the whole season. They had, you know, some of the, I think there was one or two main characters and some other characters that were just for the web only show, that it kind of added some depth to that part of the season. So, but I'm going to ask my wife if she watched the Grey's Anatomy thing. I don't watch that show, and she doesn't watch Battlestar Galactica, so we have a line drawn in the house. But so we'll see how she does with that.
Yeah, let me know. Please let me know. I would be curious. Oh, let's talk about news a little bit. You know, an ongoing issue that we cover here on TWiM, and that's covered in a lot of places. is the whole pay-to-play issue as it relates to news conduct, news content, excuse me. And Lon, I'm going to throw this to you first. But this is, you know, we're going to be talking about this more and more because Rupert Murdoch especially is really beating the drum about this, you know, just content being paid for and so on.
Desperately.
Yeah, really, exactly. Right. Man, he hates Google. He's like, Google, don't include me in your search results. That's silly. Google, you can just, you can put me as much as you want in Google. I want to be found. This is in the Sydney Morning Herald, which is, God, that paper has really got some really deep, good analytical stories on the media business. And the story says newspaper publishers have given the first indication of how they plan to charge people for reading news online with one of the world's best-known newspapers, The Times of London, to offer an all-you-can-eat package to readers by the Northern Hemisphere Spring. I just wanted to read Northern Hemisphere Spring because you don't find that in many stories. Web users will have access to the newspaper's website as part of their general subscription fee or pay a fee to download as many stories as they'd like during a 24-hour period. And there had been a lot of speculation that there'd be more of an iTunes model, a kind of pay on a story basis. Lon, as somebody who's in the news business now and you're sort of building a new model, this pure online TV news network that you're doing, what do you think about these different newspaper options that we're hearing about and kind of what's next?
Well, you know, we're desperately asking people to take our content for free. So we have a totally different model here, mainly because I think video is a lot more portable than text is. And I think that's something that has to get worked on. But I personally, just reading the Murdoch, developments over the last couple of weeks, I think they're making a huge mistake putting everything behind a paywall, because ultimately, you know, I think there's been some talk today. You know, Jeff Jarvis talked about the commoditization of news. And, you know, for us, what we're doing is we're producing news packages that we don't actually want played on our website. In fact, we want our stuff to be handed out to, you know, big media and small independent providers and bloggers alike, because we can help enhance what they have to offer and keep people on there longer. Because ultimately, big media has eyeballs, and it's really shocking that they're trying to find more and more ways to have people stop looking at their websites, because you know, there's a lot of good content out there that many people like myself are willing to give away for free to help enhance those other sites. So that's the direction we're taking with it, and I don't think this paywall thing is going to work for them. There's a small paper in Connecticut called the Willimantic Chronicle, and they were very smart in their web strategy in that they offered the entire newspaper online. You had to pay for it from day one. And I think they didn't get their users into this bifurcated mode where half their readership is looking at ads and looking at all the infrastructure-based media, and the other half is getting it for free without all of that infrastructure-supported media. And I think that's where the media industry is headed right now.
Well, that's kind of what the Wall Street Journal did, too. I mean, they mm-hmm. pretty much, you were Wall Street Journal and The Economist, I think. There was a paywall almost from day one, which
just
I think has made it a lot easier for them.
This is the way it's going
to be. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, the Wall Street Journal is making money off of its online subscription. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's...
So is The Economist, I think.
Well, you know, it's like if you train people from early on to pay, they know that's the way it is. And, you know, I think I don't have the exact figures, but I can get them. But, I mean, they're charging, whatever, $70, $100 a year for
also,
that online
it's
journal.
It's a specialty, you know, it's a niche.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
I mean,
it has to be a niche.
Both
absolutely.
The Economist and the Wall Street Journal have a clientele that really... that specific information is very important to them. And I think that's the challenge for a lot of these general news gathering sites.
Absolutely.
Is that not only do they have to compete with each other, but they have to compete with the average individual uploading to YouTube, which I think is another story that we have here. But the thing is that they, you know, they have to compete with that as well and be able to distinguish why you should pay for that when I can get, you know, more news from, you know, folks standing on the ground with their iPhones.
Well, let's talk about the YouTube story. And Laura, I definitely want to throw this to you because I think you use YouTube for your videos, right?
Yep.
Although you probably, I know, and I meant to mention earlier, you also, you're kind of an interesting mix. I mean, you have content that you do yourself, that you run on your own site. You have a lot of partners, but you also have a relationship with NBC, local media. So you're kind of playing in big media and independent media. So it's sort of an interesting perspective that Lori brings. YouTube Direct, it basically allows you to take the embed functionality of YouTube and put it directly into your own site. So that YouTube Direct is already being used by news sites like NPR, Politico, ABC News, The Washington Post, and others. And what this basically does is, you know, ties by back into what we were originally talking about, the whole flip camera, you carry your iPhone with you, consumers are out. I mean, YouTube has been terrific at really trying to evangelize and encourage, you know, just the average consumer to also be scary, but, you know, but to also be a reporter to some degree and be out there with their own channels, whether it's, you know, producing a channel from your local town hall meeting or whatever it is. But now YouTube Direct just kind of takes that functionality and lets you do it yourself. Lori, what do you think about YouTube Direct, and what do you think it does to, you know, does for, is it yet another thing that helps out this whole citizen journalism future?
I think it has a lot of great potential, and it definitely would be something that I would even consider using for my website, getting other people's perspectives on any issues that I bring up on the resident.net. But there is the downside to citizen journalism, was that people mistaking anybody's perspective as, you know, as qualified news. I mean, everyone is entitled to their own perspective, and I love hearing from the average citizen, but it's still not necessarily the same presentation of news that you're going to get from someone that studied journalism or from someone in the industry. So it presents, there goes my husband, it presents an interesting, which is already going on anyway. I mean, there's a lot of websites like, you know, CNN doing the iReport, or everyone's got an iReport or a uReport or someone else's report going on. But you end up with a lot of crap that way. I mean, you know, 95% of YouTube is utter crap. So to me, it's going to be interesting to see if people are able to find the citizen journalists that actually have qualified information and be able to, you know, kind of find them to present on their site.
What do you think?
Other than just like, wow, we're getting crap.
Well, the other thing is with YouTube Direct, what you're talking about, there is editorial control. So what happens is for these sites that are making YouTube, this isn't just the stuff that's going on to YouTube. This is CNN or the Huffington Post or whoever getting this massive input from a protest, from a, you know, something going on, and whether it's Iran or whether it's Afghanistan or Venezuela. Let's just say all of this information is coming in, and now they have way more information, way more input than they ever had before about what's actually happening on the ground in ways that their press could never get. And then they have a job of collating through that information and trying to figure out what is worth actually showing, and whether they, you know enough about it. And I think that that's a huge opportunity for us to really understand what's going on the ground in many quote-unquote news opportunities, because it's just, you know, the handful of press people that are there, you know, oftentimes just can't get to where these people can get to with their cell phones. And I think we saw that. I think Iran is a perfect example of what happens when everyone's got a phone and can upload. You know, and this is just, I think this is empowering that, which I think is very exciting.
What's also interesting to me is how news organizations are changing, and they're realizing they have to rely on these lower cost models. I mean, right. I think about a company like Demand Studio, which is a division of Demand Media. I mean, this is a company that produces how-to content and how-to videos, and they'll pay a videographer, say, $300 to go shoot 10 or 20 videos. I mean, Alex, could you even imagine? Right. Like, for Pixel Core to make 10 to 20 videos, it's going to cost a lot more than $300. Obviously, you're going to get higher mm-hmm. quality, and, you know, you're going to get your skills and all of that, but it's a little bit amazing to think there are filmmakers who are willing to work for that.
Well, I think what's important for a lot of the stuff to work is what we tend to call internally wetware development. so that, you know, you have hardware development, you have software development, and then you have, you know, wetware development, what goes on between people's noggin, between their ears, you know, and that's something that a lot more training, whether it's iReport or YouTube or whatever, of telling people, this is what we expect. Show an angle of this, show a close up, do this, grab this. This is inbounds, this is out of bounds. You know, and if you start giving people that guidance and they know that they might get their 15 seconds of fame, you know, people will follow those rules. You just have to tell them what they are.
We applied for YouTube Direct at localonlinenews.tv. And what we plan to do with it, and what I really like about the thought that YouTube put into it, is that you have a choice as to how you want to use that content. What we're going to do with it, if they approve us, is just have the opportunity for people to upload video. And if we happen to like it and feel that it'll work in a piece, we can actually download the source video directly off of that site that YouTube is maintaining for us, edited into our regular packages that are reviewed by my business partner, who's a professional news anchor who's done this for a long time and really kind of steers the editorial content on what we're doing. So I think it gives some options because we're a, you know, a shoestring company right now. We're really living on the edge trying to see how cheaply can we do this, and having users out there send in content for us, especially in an easy way where we don't have to call them with technical instructions like, here, just upload the file here. It's a great tool. So we're looking forward to using it some more.
I'm going to move.
Tim?
Go, Alex. Sorry about that.
It sounds good to me. I mean, you know, the interesting thing, when you talk about all this, are people going to continue to do it? Will people, you know, whenever there's been an advance in an industry, you know, you look at the Industrial Revolution or you look at the tobacco industry, how that was – that grew because it was run by, or all the work was done by slaves. The Industrial Revolution, we had really cheap labor that came from other countries. And now you look at the online video industry, people are doing it for free. At what point in time will they stop doing it for free? I don't know. It's, you know, they're getting paid through vanity or, you know, the exposure that they're getting, whatever it does for their, you know, their sense of self-esteem. But at what point does that stop?
Well, I mean, I think at any point in time, this kind of stuff has always kind of sifted out. And the ones that are really good, you know, when we look at blogging, I mean, you know, a lot of the people who started off as just a little blog have done pretty well. Some of them who are well organized, who are dependable, who are trustworthy, you know, I mean, well. Some degree, you know, we're well organized anyway. So right. I think that you are right, Tim. I think that you have this huge rush of people who will do it for anything, and then I think that typically the cream kind of slowly rises to the top, you know, and then the rest, everyone else stops doing it because that opportunity has passed them.
That's my hope in life. The cream does keep rising to the top. And I'm sorry, Alex, I can't read lips. So sometimes Alex and I like try to talk to each other during the show. And I'm like, huh? What? So sorry about that little moment. I know we need to let Lori go in about 6 or 7 minutes. So I'm going to get to a couple other stories. And then we're going to blend tech some books today.
Really?
Yeah, we're going to blend tech some books. How about that?
I wonder what paper's going to do in a blender.
As long as there's not a panda in there, we're fine. YouTube getting social. So, you know, this is a – I don't even know where this story is from because I got it from Google Reader. You know, that's – Rupert, yeah. I am the problem. Mr. Murdoch, see, I don't even know. This could come from your paper. I don't even know. Just thinking about it from Google. Because everything comes from Google these days. As socialization continues to dominate the web, YouTube, once satisfied with being the top online video site, is taking steps not to be left behind. This story is basically about YouTube building more tools in, to include friend suggestions based on your Gmail address book, connecting your YouTube account to social networks using the auto share feature. The story says some of this activity is hard to quantify because every day millions of YouTube links are sent via email, IM, Twitter, and other places. But YouTube has shared some stats kind of on the socialization of YouTube. Over 1 million people are auto-sharing videos to Twitter, Facebook, and Google Reader. Each auto-shared tweet sent from YouTube turns into an average of 7 new sessions on YouTube. Over 1 million people have found and subscribed to at least one friend on YouTube based on the friend suggest feature, and more than 1 million new subscriptions are created daily. It's kind of interesting. Lori, because we need to let you go in a little bit, I'll throw this to you first. But it's an interesting idea, you know, whether you want to sort of talk specifically or broadly about this, but it's just sort of an interesting idea just about, you know, adding more social features and sort of when it becomes overload. And that's something I think about a lot with social networking. I mean, just how vital it is, but also, you know, how it's at such a fever pitch already. When does it have the potential to just freaking explode because there's too much of it?
Yeah, I'm definitely already at that point where it's just too much. I already closed down my MySpace account. For me, it's too much. I think what YouTube does is it's still owning the video space, and I think it does it great. I don't feel a need to connect on YouTube. It might be because I have an interesting perspective because I do have my show and lots of different ways to connect with my viewers already. For me, it's like enough already. Even just answering my YouTube mail can be taxing because I get mail in like 70 different places and so many different ways to connect with people that I don't need another one to keep up with. And so the more sites that keep adding these social features, the more I feel it necessary. Like, okay, I have to connect through here. I don't know. I have always been a firm believer in, you know what you do and do it and do it well. And if someone comes along and has this other great product, you don't need to necessarily incorporate what they do into what you do because they're succeeding with it. So for me, it's just like a more noise. Everyone might disagree with me on that, but I'm not looking to connect anymore outside of like video comments and the original channels of connecting that YouTube provided.
Yeah, Tim, what do you think as an active YouTuber? Agree, disagree, and sort of what's the pulse? What do people out there? I mean, you're interacting with a lot of folks via social networks. Well, you know, what do they think about these different elements and features and the necessity or perhaps unnecessity of them?
Well, it's kind of interesting in that, you know, my friends are on Twitter. You know, I dabble in Facebook a little bit, but I spend most of my social media time on Twitter. Don't really use MySpace. YouTube, I use to connect with people that I don't know that are fans of either French Made TV or have something to say about a video that I posted for my blog. And, you know, if you step back from it a second and you take a look at it like it was different telephone companies, and imagine if you had to use one company to contact your family, you have to use another company to contact your friends. It seems like at some point in time, it's all going to come together so that we don't have to go to MySpace, go to Twitter, go to Facebook, go to YouTube. It needs to be simplified. Maybe it'll be simplified in a browser. I don't have the answer right now, but it is overload, and it's hard to keep up with every single community that's out there. And there are different dashboards that people are developing so that you can pay attention to all the places that your audience is at, but it's a lot of work.
We need something to guide us through this great smorgasbord of content. Hey, Lori, tell people where we'll go to Lon and Alex in a second, but tell people, our listeners, where they can find you, and then we will say goodbye to you. Where can they find you online?
Sorry, I hate to jump off.
No, it's okay.
I hate to jump off. I wish I could say. You can find me at theresident.net.
Easy enough. See, just one place. Thank you, Lori, for joining us. Have a great afternoon.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you. You too. Bye.
Alex, Lon, YouTube, socialization, too much? When do our brains explode?
Lon?
Well, I think my brain's already exploded. But the problem we have, because you know, we're a local, hyper-local news provider, so we're our target audience are not techies. They're not even young people to a large degree. Our Facebook page, you know, most people are over 40. So, you know, people are first kind of dabbling into social media and social networking, and the biggest problem we have is we've got our content all over the place. We put it on YouTube, we're on Blip, we're on Vidler, we're everywhere. And conversations start springing up in different places. And it's hard to kind of consolidate all this thing. And there probably needs to be some kind of social sharing aggregation out there to try to bring it all together. You know, Discuss is doing a great job for commenting when they come in through our site. And it's starting to bring in some Twitter discussions and some other things as well. But I think that's going to become a big challenge here, is getting these communities built when everyone's looking where they want to look to get content.
Been folks who have tried to do that, Alex? I mean, has that really? I mean, there have been like Friend Feed, right? I mean, did that ever?
Well, I mean, there's Dig. I mean,
right? But I mean, do you think it's? But I understand the point, and I feel that way too. That there's sometimes when you just have to stop. I mean, I had two email addresses for a while. You know, I had my Comcast.net one and the Gmail one. And at a certain point, I just said, I'm not gonna check the Comcast. I'm done. You know, I kind of rode both for a little while and said, okay, I'm done. It's just the Gmail one.
I have like six email addresses. But they all feed into the same thing. They all feed into the same.
Well, sure. Yeah, I know. But it's just, so you're only going one place to check. But I just wonder that with socialization. It's like, somebody has a delicious page. Oh, go to Dig, go to this place and that place. And I know for a while you were dabbling with Plurk and.
Right. You know, I have this thing where I really want, when it comes to media, I do. And again, I'm not going to talk about it too long because I've said it before. But the idea of being able to find a group that has a certain correlation to me and then define, I just want to be able to define how big that group is. And then define at what correlation do I want to know about it? You know, and I want, those are the only two sliders I want. Like, look in this big cloud. Let me just turn the slider up and it'll tell me how many people are in that group as I turn it up. Is it 10%, 20%, 30%, 40%? What if I turned it all the way up to 80%? And there's only like, let's say 80 people out of millions that have an 80% correlation to my, everything that I've rated. And then let me just turn a little slider that says when more than half of them have seen it or more than 10% have seen it or whatever it is, show it to me. You know, and the thing is that, and so the thing is, but I want to be able to control those sliders. I don't want them to try to figure it out behind it because I want to be able to play with it. The thing, and they want me to be able to play with it because then I'm sitting there as a user deciding how much content I'm getting, how much I'm correlated with other people, because I'll play with it. I'll sit there and go, oh, I'm not getting enough. I want more. So I'll turn it up a little bit and then I'll go, okay, that's too much. And then I'll turn it down and I'll play around with it. And you don't want a lot of dials. You just want, you know, give me a pile of people. And how
I love this. It's like a sliding social scale of like when it needs to percolate up into something you need. But I love it.
I think that's a very cool idea. I think that if you did this, number one is you'd find that those correlations, you could get to a point where it automatically, when you joined, it would automatically give you a correlation based on what everyone else is doing that probably gave you a pretty good experience once you got into it after it's been used for a little while. The second thing is that I think you'd end up finding that there were certain people that end up being fulcrums and they don't even know that they're being fulcrums. You know, there'd be a person in Iowa who just because of the weird eclectic thing that they have, when they pick something, it just blows through the, you know, and from an advertiser's point of view, knowing who those people are would be very valuable.
I mean, you're talking about social influencers, yeah. You know, and who, for whatever reason, is keying onto trends that are interesting.
They just happen to be standing on these three things, right. You know, and anyway, but I think to me, I would love to see something like that on YouTube. You know, I would love to see something that is, that has that, you know, that just gives me those two little sliders and I could pick a lot.
It's kind of like, you know, a Netflix recommendation or an Amazon recommendation,
but
community recommendations.
Right.
But it's dynamic. It's real time kind of community recommendations. And I think we hear about folks, I'm trying to remember the name of it.
Well,
right,
and I think
now.
That, I think
we
that,
hear about sort of social IPTV companies that are trying to do things like this to kind of, you know, so what you're talking about is just surface the things that the people you care about.
Right.
Like, always want to know what I'm saying, right?
BTV is one of those things that's what you're talking about, Daisy.
Yeah. Yeah. Beat TV.
No, B, like B. A bumblebee.
Oh, BTV. Okay, right. Yeah, because I work for BTV. So BTV does that. I need to spend a little more time with the. With BTV.
But I think, you know, to me, I don't want no control and I don't want a lot of control. I just want those two little sliders. Because the thing is I just want to, because I think that you could get an enormous amount of control over the kind of content that's coming in. If you were just able to control, you know, and I would rate everything because I know it would truly affect me. You know, I would rate every video I watch because I'd know that this is going to affect how my video is going to come to me. You know,
it's like
based
a
on
fantasy
all
of what we want tech wise. This is kind of
cool.
You know, hey, I want to get to a couple more news things, and then we'll do the blend tech thing. There's a company reached out to me last week. Ripple, RIPPOL. You know, when I said I'm looking for story ideas for TWIM, and it's announcing a public beta launch on November 20th, which was last Friday, an intelligent video discovery engine, help people discover, watch, and share online content in real time. So kind of the things that we're talking about, you know, that it's you're bringing in streaming video from all sorts of places, Revision 3, Netflix, Hulu, so on and so forth. I tried it out. I'm going to tell you my number one problem with it. You have to sign in. Don't you feel that's just a big roadblock? I don't want to sign into services. I guess you have to sometimes, but I don't know. I just wish there was a way. Like, why should I? Just to try something out, I don't want to have to sign in. Do you feel that way?
Didn't you have to sign in for Twitter?
But no.
Oh, he's got you on the ropes now.
No. Not to observe. I don't have to be signed in to go see what Tim Street just said today. I don't have to be signed in to check what Alex said. So no, you don't. Before I joined Twitter 2.5 years ago.
Touché.
Yeah, exactly. But no, touche back to you. you don't have to do that. I mean, you don't have to sign into everything,
right?
I just think it's a bit of a barrier. Like, if this is a service that's trying to kind of become and you know, Ripple, if you're listening, I'd be happy to give you feedback when I don't have to sign in. That's my take. Like Twitter, you know, I mean, if I just want to know what my friend Courtney Summers has said recently, I just go to Twitter/Courtney_S. Easy. I don't have to sign in. If I want to participate, I sign in. I want to sometimes just be able to observe something. Before you try out a new social service or video recommendation engine or whatever it is, don't you just want to observe?
But Facebook doesn't let you go very far without signing in.
Yeah, but that's Facebook is Facebook. I mean, Facebook can do that because the Facebook, if it were a country, would be the fourth largest in the world. So it's okay, you know? Okay, all right. We'll move on to something else. One more. Oh, you know, this is a topic from Lon, actually, something we were emailing about this. We were talking about aggregation on new devices, and we chat here a lot about Apple TVs and Rokus, which I have now, Alex.
Both?
I've had Apple TV forever, dude.
So
I have a
Roku
now.
It's great.
I have everything. I've got my Xbox. By the way, I think we plug in our Mac.
So
our
evidently,
TV.
I think twit.tv now is on the Roku.
Is it part of the channel store? Because that launched today. Is the Roku channel store? It's so easy to use. I think we might have talked about it last week on the show, so we won't spend a lot of time on Roku. It's just so unbelievably easy to use.
And you just never watch TV again after you download all the Law & Orders.
Yeah, you just set up what you want.
Yeah, that's
all
I'm saying. Once you have every season of Law & Order, it's like you go through Comcast, I go down the cable thing, and then I go, oh, let's just watch a Law & Order.
Right.
I'm sure there's one in there we haven't seen yet.
Every now and then, you know what used to happen to me? Like, I've seen them all now, but every now and then, there would be a Seinfeld that I hadn't seen. And my husband goes, you are the luckiest person in the world. Because, you know, this is about four or five years ago.
Right.
We were sort of kind of watching some episodes again. And I go, I've never seen this one. He's like, you're like Kramer. You are the luckiest person in the world. Good stuff just happens to you. How is there a Seinfeld you've never seen? I wish I were you. But Lon, I'm gonna toss this one to you because you brought up.
Sure.
You sent me some great stuff. Tell me, you know, as a content provider, as a news provider, what are some of the challenges that you're dealing with on trying to get onto these alternative distribution places? Challenges as a content provider, and then challenges that you see as a user.
Okay, well, from the content provider standpoint, especially one that's small and hyper-locally focused. So right now, we're in about four communities in Connecticut. We're about to get into a few more. But, you know, we're not getting a million viewers. You know, we never will in one town. You know, we're at a point now where, as of today, actually, we hit 42,000 video plays for just West Hartford, Connecticut since April. For one town, that's great. Our advertisers are really starting to perk up with those numbers because, you know, we're attracting, you know, very influential people in the community, and things have really started to get rolling. But ultimately for us, where I think this needs to go is that somebody needs to be able to watch us on their television. That's for me, the holy grail. Now, one of our sponsors is a major furniture supplier in Connecticut, Bob's Discount Furniture, and anyone listening knows Bob. They've got a couch that has a built-in refrigerator, so you can take cans of whatever and keep it cold. You don't have to get up except to go to the bathroom.
And they're working on it.
Exactly. What was that movie that they made about that? But really, that we design rooms around watching television on a big screen on a comfortable sitting area, and for us, that's where I think we need to
Japanese
be because. Yeah, exactly. Well, for some people, maybe. I don't watch TV on the toilet. But right now, we're asking people to take their laptop, and it's like putting your television in your lap. You know, it's just very uncomfortable.
Especially when you have to go to the bathroom.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's problems in life that you have to deal with. And there's a pause button on a TV. You can get up and go do that, and which is probably why TiVo and everyone are so successful. So, you know, we've been out there now trying to get ourselves in all these boxes. Ironically, Apple has been the easiest to work with because you put your RSS feed into the iTunes store and you're done. You know, not too many people are finding us on there, but, you know, eventually that will pick up as if more people get Apple TVs. You know, our path to the Roku box is going to be through blip.tv. And initially they had turned us down for that because we weren't global or national in nature. And as I wrote to Daisy, I kind of threw a little fit on Twitter, and they changed their mind on that. We'll be on the Roku box through Blip.
Yay.
But the problem right now is that it's great. And by the way, Roku's new channel store, some people in the chat room are going to be very jealous. I just got it activated this morning. It's cool. Mainly because there's logic involved with it. And, you know, what we see as a local provider is that, you know, we'd love it for there to be a local news channel that you hit the thing, you turn it on, and your TV says, oh, hey, look, here's five news stories that are near you. You know, YouTube is doing that now with the News Near You feature. So, you know, Roku's got a platform that could work in. So I'm really excited about that potentially taking place because we're, you know, again, hyper-locally focused. If you go to our site right now, you're going to watch a story about the ribbon cutting for a senior home in West Hartford. Now, that's not of interest to someone, you know, in the Twit TV studios in Petaluma, but for people in West Hartford, especially the people that have family members there or involved with that business in some way, that's interesting.
Now,
to them.
Do you have anyone covering the beat here in Petaluma?
Not yet. Unless if you want to, Alex, I'll send you a camera. We can get going.
you know, I was thinking that maybe I should get a video camera someday. You know, as it was,
yeah,
was
you should try it. You know, we're real easy to work with, and we'd love to do it. But you know, it's that's for us really what we need to be doing is getting ourselves viewed in the most easiest way possible. Yeah. And the content, we spend a lot of time on it. And we put a lot of work into making it, you know, professional enough so that people see that we're really putting some editorial effort behind it. And right now we're frustrated because there really is just, I got 12 boxes hooked up to my TV right now, you know, and there's nothing's consistent. So, you know, I'm hoping that there's some kind of aggregation tools. And if anyone's listening, to start thinking about this problem, because web video is never going to take off like we want it to, unless people can watch it in their couch with the cup holders and the refrigerator.
I think that one of the things that I thought was really,
and the toilet.
Yeah. one of the things I thought was really interesting is that, you know, the new announcement, that YouTube is now going to start streaming 1080p, which is really going head on with TV at that point. I mean, I don't know.
It makes
exactly.
me want to go to the bathroom even more.
But I mean, you know, it's been one thing because the seven, I have to admit, what they call HD on YouTube has been really like 960 by 540. So you upload 720p and
like
you get something smaller,
slightly higher quality,
basically. I'm really interested to see what the quality of this 1080p looks like. And you're kind of wondering, you know, with YouTube, it's kind of like, well, why would you watch that on your computer? You know, 1080p at this point, I mean, to do a little bit of the math for the listeners, if you are not closer than 10 feet to a monitor, not larger than 60 inches, you're probably going to have a hard time seeing the difference between 1080p and 720p.
Yeah, so I mean, does it even matter online? I actually did a story on this for Emmy Magazine and just talking to folks at Hulu, on YouTube, and at TV networks. I mean, this is, you know, Emmy Magazine goes to, obviously, right. you know, folks who are on the voting board and Hollywood producers. And it's like all well and good that everything is produced in high def online, but it's so hard to actually tell. In a lot of cases, right?
But it doesn't make any sense if you're thinking that people are going to be watching it on their home computer. It makes a lot of sense if you are thinking that people are going to watch. And the thing to watch here, I think, is I think that there's a couple things. But one thing to watch is the combination of the YouTube 1080p solution with the new iMac 27-inch TV.
It's gorgeous. I saw it this weekend. Unbelievable.
It's a 27-inch TV that has a VESA mount, so you can hook it to the wall. You can, I mean, it is a TV with a Mac built into it. And so when you look at the two of those things kind of together, I think that we're seeing this convergence happening really fast, where we're going to see a lot, because now that Apple's done it, a lot of other people are going to, I mean, people have been working on this for a while, but the idea that you're really making a TV that has a computer built into it, you know, and now we're wondering whether this box or whether anything we need to plug in makes any sense at all. And if, you know, all you need is an Ethernet cable and you're starting to, you know, watch it all. And I think that now finding some easy way to watch YouTube that way is the next challenge. But I wouldn't be surprised to see a 37-inch or 42-inch iMac, you know, in another year or two, you know.
We can only dream. You know, I was recently asked if I would consider reviewing a product that I will not name, but it's PC-based. And I said, everybody knows I've switched to a Mac. I'm sorry, I can't do this. I turned it down. Hey, let's blend tech some books before we close out the show. We do this blend tech your business segment from time to time. And, you know, because I'm now trying to find ways to blend and mash my media world and my novelist world. Anyway, there's an online community called The Tenors that I'm part of. And it's just a group of other young adult, middle grade debut authors whose books are coming out in 2010. So I wrote a post just last week on how authors should be thinking about a video strategy for their books. Because we're all drinking the Kool-Aid here, right? I mean, this is, we all believe, and that's kind of the premise of our Blend Tech Your Business segment, is we all believe that there is some video series that can probably be done for any type of business. And in this case, the books are the business. So what I had, I'm going to be doing a few of these my own online, because I've probably got about 10 or 12 books that I'm going to be blend tacking. So I just kind of picked the first few ones that came through. And we're not going to critique synopses or anything like that, because that's not what this is about. But just to kind of go through some of the quick descriptions, blurbs on the books, and just do bang, 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 kind of quick thoughts on what you could do for a video series. I've got some thoughts on all of these. I don't want to, you know, steal the mic or anything like that. So obviously I want the rest of you boys to weigh in. Okay, book one. That I have here. It is by Chelsea Campbell, I believe. I hope I'm getting the name right. The Rise of Renegade X, yes, by Chelsea Campbell. It's coming out in spring 2010. So the premise here is that Damian Locke knows his destiny attending the University for Supervillains, and he's going to become the next professional evil genius. But when he discovers he's the product of his supervillain mother's one-night stand with, of all people, a superhero, his best-laid plans are ruined as he's forced to live with a superhero family. So basically, it's, you know, a supervillain, a boy who thinks he's a supervillain now has to live with a superhero family. So my initial thought was a fun video series could be either the author could do this. I don't know. Chelsea, we'll have to talk more and find out if you're comfortable being on camera. If not you, you know, find an actor or a friend or whatever. I thought it'd be fun to kind kind of do like a short video series when the book is being released on, you know, things that suck about being a superhero. You know, just kind of like short, you know, minute and a half, you know, this is kind of like The Incredibles, the movie The Incredibles, you know, sort of the pros and cons of villains versus superheroes, things that suck about being a superhero. That was just kind of my initial idea. So I'll throw it out to you fellows and see, what you want to throw in if we're going to blend tech this book.
Tim, did you have any?
Well, Jay Lutzky has a video series about superheroes, kind of like The Office of superheroes, called Alpha Male. And you know, that's good. It's a different age group. I think it'd be fun for this particular series if you gave some of the target audience the books ahead of time, and then had them have fun with the different characters. Find out what's fun about those characters and see what you can do. Almost creating like reenactments of the different scenes from the book might be a fun way to play with it. But
Really good idea. It's sort of when you think about, you know, giving out your content, letting people play with it. I mean, that's kind of what you're saying. Let people kind of mash up your content, you know. Your video,
think about how people, when The Dark Knight came out, how they dressed up as Batman and the Joker, and they kind of reenacted the scenes, and they goofed on it, but it was still fun, and they went viral.
That's kind of cool. Let's go on to another book, and I'll throw this one to Alex and Lon if you want, but again, I sort of have small ideas for all of them, so if any of you feel stuck, I won't let you be stuck. Escape from Camp David by Dee Garrison, coming out from HarperCollins. Dee says she's not a camera person, so the idea should not be with her being the author on camera. So that's fine, and that's fair. Book is targeted to 9 to 12-year-olds, particularly boys. This is the inside copy. The presidential retreat Camp David is one of the safest places in the United States, so why can't the president's son Luke and his friend Theo stay there without Secret Service agents constantly hovering over them? So they decide, basically... So what should be a fun summer for Luke, Theo, and Luke's once friend Callie suddenly turns deadly when an earthquake sets off a raging wildfire, causing a chain reaction that wreaks havoc on Camp David's security and everyone's safety. Now they need to override the security systems, you know, get out of there, escape from Camp David. Alex?
I have a general blend tech for all of these, okay, which is kind of a little bit about what Tim was talking about. And then specifically with this one, the general blend tech for all of these is to do kind of what Tim was talking about, which is find little segments, 1-minute segments from the book, you know, like little clips that give you a taste of what that book's going to be like, and shoot them, you know, and shoot like a little video that is them interacting, them having that conversation, them, you know, dealing with whatever it is that's there, that
so
kind of gives
you
a sense.
Actors for that?
Yeah, actors are not very expensive. So, no. I mean, non-SAG actors, you know, you can go up to Craigslist and you can get a list of 80 of them in San Francisco. You can have them all try out. You know, give them some water, and they'll all come in and try out. Then you can pick some good ones, and you can actually get pretty good ones that for the day. Now, the thing is that this is assuming there's going to be some budget for it, but not
exactly.
But it's not going to be, you know, it's not going to cost you thousands and thousands of dollars for the actors. You're not talking about name actors. You're talking about local theater actors doing the stuff, but I think that there's a lot of, I mean, when I was an actor, you know, long ago, for a local stage thing, I would have totally, you know, gotten the opportunity to do that, gotten the opportunity to have some
kind
of...
It's like doing a student film. I mean, I dabbled in acting for 9 months, my final year of college, and you did anything.
Anything, yeah, and it's just a great
student
opportunity.
Student films. That's what videos of today are, student films.
Well, part of it is that's for an actor, a lot of it's practice. It's getting used to being around all those cameras, you know, and it's a different world. Doing things that are segments of it. The other one with this one specifically is you could do little segments of what... is the security like with Camp David? You know, like from what you can pull in from the, you know, be kind of like a History Channel or Discovery Channel
cool,
thing
like
about
a real documentary,
yeah,
kind there, of
there,
on
there,
it.
There
what it's
posts
really like,
and there's, you know, it's 36 square miles, and it's That's this, cool. and it's got that, and you know, to get people interested.
Because of time, I'm going to jump onto the next book, and we're going to do these quickly. And Lon, this is a complicated one, so I'm just going to put you
on the spot,
in the hot
huh?
seat.
Okay,
this is a book called Brightly Woven by Alex Bracken, fantasy book. When Waylon North brings rain to a region that's been dry for over 10 years, he's promised anything he'd like as a reward. No one is more surprised or angry than 16-year-old Sydell when he chooses her. As the pair rushes toward the capital, intent on stopping an approaching war, they're pursued by a dark wizard and plagued by unusually wild weather. But the sudden earthquakes and freak storm storms may not be coincidence after all. As Sydell discovers the dark reason for the North's interest in her and begins to master her own mysterious power, it becomes increasingly clear that the fate of the kingdom rests in her hands. That was the only one. Sorry for the other books. I couldn't. I did. You know, I just kind of got into like my book reading mode with that. What do you think?
Well, I think Alex's idea is great because I there's certainly no shortage of people looking for exposure, and this is actually probably maybe a great thing for a flip camera. You know, maybe we, you know, with someone playing this young woman, you know, sneaking into a room with a flip camera and doing a video diary of these powers that she's acquiring and maybe the things that's happening and her fear of those things that she maybe has a hard time controlling. Maybe this is a way to bring some life to this character and develop an interest for people to read the book when it comes out. That might be something that could work and keep flipping business too.
Yeah, exactly. I like this one. And I had one thought for this one. Just knowing Alex a little bit, and I think she's probably would be good on camera. You could also just do a how to build a fantasy, and this would be a little bit more tradey. But you know, if this would be super simple to do if you're the author, you know, just shoot yourself just doing how to build, you know, like an 8-week series or whatever on how to build a fantasy world in a novel. I mean, there's so many fantasy books out there now. This is an author who's just gone through it, and just that whole world building experience is so important. The final book we have is, I'm not going to read the entire description. It's Christina McBride. It's The Tension of Opposites, and it's a psychological thriller. Coming out from Egmont, USA, about a girl who was kidnapped, and then a couple years later, it turns out she's actually alive. And I think that's kind of heavy subject matter. But there was actually a book that came out 2 years ago called 13 Reasons Why by Jay Asher, also a young adult book. And it's about a girl who committed suicide, and she left behind these tapes. And that's what they are, like the 13. I mean, it's a very chilling book, but it's very well done. It's been New York Times bestseller for over a year. And she basically sends the tapes to the 13 people who she blames as the reasons for her suicide. So you get to hear from the person who killed herself. But there was kind of an interesting video series. It was super cheap, did well, probably got about 40,000 views for each one, where all it is a video, like an old cassette tape player. Somebody just shot the old cassette tape player, and there was an actress, I think Olivia Thirby, who did the voice of Hannah, the girl who committed suicide, just reading some of the things that she said. And it was very quiet, very underground. You know, wasn't necessarily connected to the book initially, but because it was already popular, it kind of surfaced up, and it was like Hannah's suicide tapes. And because this is a psychological thriller, I kind of thought, you know, there could be something in that same vein. I mean, whatever it is that's happening like that in the book. Because I don't know that with a book that's a little bit, you know, heavier like this, you know, you don't want to do a fun or tongue-in-cheek one, do you? You want to kind of keep it true to the subject matter. What do you think, Alex?
Yeah, I think that figuring out a way to, once again, you know, augment. We talked about this with even shows before, but augment what's already in the book to give you something a little deeper, to give you slices of it. It can be both. It could either be an excerpt from the book, or it could be something that is extra. You know, kind of a, you know, that there's something that gives you a little bit more background, so that if you got it, it wouldn't actually tell you anything about the book other than it would set you up a little bit better, you know, for the book.
Could even be the phone call she gets.
Right, right. And the other thing is some people on the IRC have been asking, you know, why are we talking about all these books, you know, for the Blend Tech? And I think this is really interesting because this is what, for those listening, this is what you do when you're working on media.
Yeah,
we've got an idea, you've got to figure out how to make an idea work, you know, and how to create some content out of it. Mm-hmm. You know, so while this may not be, you know, media news the way we normally talk about it, this is kind of a back door into, right. You know, this is how this stuff gets made. Is someone comes up with an idea, we got to promote this, or we got to do this, right. Or we got to create this, and then we all brainstorm on what kind of storyline can we put together.
I mean, this is what your job is like day in and day out. You're creating videos for a number of people. I mean, Tim, when you land a new advertiser for French Made TV, I mean, that's part of what you need to do. Who was your most recent advertiser? Was it Dub Dub?
Dim Dim.
Dim Dim. I'm sorry. Yeah. Sam Close. I mean, I'm presuming that when you land new advertisers like Dim Dim, and you've had plenty of other ones, M Dialogue, this is part of the process. You spend time. And yes, obviously. And look, I put my disclaimer out there. I'm, you know, I have a book coming out, so I obviously have an interest in books and trying to figure out how to promote them with video. But I think as so many of our listeners are in the video production business, you know, that sort of the brainstorming skills and figuring out how to turn any type of business into video is a skill that you need to have to succeed. I mean, Tim, that's what you're doing, I presume, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you've got to brainstorm these things out and figure out what you think that's going to emotionally engage an audience and get them to watch.
There you go. All right, on that note, let's wrap it up. Tim, where can people find you?
You can find me onetimstreet.com.
See, we're all going with the one. Just we're streamlining socialization. Lon, where do you want people to find you?
You can find my homepage at Lon, if you can call it that anymore, my blog at lonsideman.com. We also have our news site at localonlinenews.tv. That's our West Hartford site, but we'll be adding some additional Connecticut communities as well. And Twitter, Lon Seidman.
And it's Seidman.
That is
Alex,
correct.
Where do you want people to find you?
You can find me on the Twitters.
And he goes by his name, Alex Lindsay. And you can find me at daisywhitney.com. This mess you've been listening to is This Week in Media. We are over and out.